Jana Beebe's Excellent Fortunes evolved like a house, in which the additions eventually overshadowed the original cottage. I've always loved series, and for years and years, I planned and outlined a boarding school series set in the Himalayas. I drew on memories of the actual school I went to in India in the early 1960s. The fictional school went through many changes of name, all based on trees. Whispering Pines, the Deodars, that's a type of cedar, the Far Oaks. I kept adding characters, dozens of them. Real trees died, alas, as manuscripts piled up. After a couple of decades of rejection slips, I gave up on fiction. Who needed it? I was into reality. I earned my living doing things as far from fiction as you could possibly get. Computer programming, fact-checking, statistics on survey data, dealing with real events, dates, causes, and effects. But I found I couldn't live without some artistic expression. Improbably, I became the music director of a society dedicated to traditional Scottish music. Meanwhile, my guardian angels and naggers-in-chief, my sister Lee and novelist Elizabeth Berg, continued to guard and to nag. Write that book! Okay, I said in 2009, I'll make one more try. So I started yet another boarding school novel. Roommates, Latin quizzes, teenage romances. Oh, brother. But this time, thank goodness, something different happened. Adult characters from the fictional town next to the fictional boarding school started creeping into the narrative. Finally, they took over. A Muslim tailor and his nephew who wants to be in the movies. The owner of a junk shop, or make that treasure emporium. And then one day, when my guard was down, a Scottish woman who has lived in India all her life and has a talking parrot, and for some weird reason is a fortune teller, came on the scene. I knew what music she would play on her violin from my experience with the Scottish orchestra. I knew what kind of a sun-drenched childhood she would have had. I knew she was a bit of a soft touch and not great on household budgets. I knew nothing, however, about parrots or the intuitive arts. So then for new material, I started looking for parrot owners, palmists, and tarot card readers. By now, mercifully, I was pretty far from boarding schools and my own biography. It was enormous fun researching parrots. Mr. Ganguly, the parrot in the book, is very savvy. But so is the one I met that plays tricks on the dog in the household by imitating the sound of kibble being dropped into a dish. I further broadened my scope by saturating myself in Hindi films of the 1950s and 1960s. Many filmmakers in post-independence India had high hopes for forging a modern national society in which people would overcome caste, religious, and regional barriers. The filmmakers told tales of reconciliation between generations, between family members. Their message was, "We're Hindu, Muslim, Sikh, Christian, but first we're all human beings. We can make progress together." Added to the boarding school morality I'd learned long ago, cheaters get caught, good sports become team captain. Now here was another set of idealistic hopes and dreams. From this mix of raw material, I found myself painting a portrait, not primarily of a school, but of a small town where people of different backgrounds were living cheek by jowl, sometimes clashing, sometimes getting back together again. My knowledge of a small town came from living in several in New England, and I think perhaps small towns all over the world feel very much alike. In these towns, eyes are sharp and memories are long. My guess is that even the city dwellers among us carry some small town, real or imagined, in their heads. So we immediately recognize the village in Thornton Wilder's play, Our Town, or Malgudi, the fictional town created in the novels of South India's R.K. Narayan, or the British village, St. Mary Mead, inhabited by Agatha Christie's Miss Marple. Hamaranagar, Jana Bibi's home, means our town. Jana, the town, and the book are all pretty innocent. The villains aren't very villainous. The technology is simple. No cars are allowed beyond the taxi stand on the outskirts of town. There are a few telephones, and messages are carried by messenger boys. This is not today's India, with its nuclear capability, its exploding economy, and its call centers, nor is the book about Maharajas and tigers, or about foreigners going bonkers from culture shock. It's about people living funny, little, improbable lives. And a parrot, which just shows that fiction is for the birds, as I suspected. I wanted Hamaranagar to be both exotic and comfortable, both set in a particular time and timeless. The town shows up on no real map, just on a sketch stuck to my file cabinet, but it's on the map of my own heart.